Here we are given, once again, the list of the 12 apostles, the names of the 12 apostles. We encounter these apostles frequently, so there are certain reflections that come back. I've said many times that there's two aspects of the apostles. One is the extraordinary side. I mean, the apostles are chosen pillars, foundation stones of the church reigning in glory. The heavenly Jerusalem has their names written on the foundation. They're the new Israel, the new 12 tribes. I mean, they're just extraordinary figures. And on them, and based on their teaching, is the whole life of the church. We belong to an apostolic church. So that's the extraordinary side. But on the ordinary side, and this is also true, they're just ordinary men. Practically nobodies, with all their human weaknesses and their disagreements and just average human personalities. And these are both true. But when Jesus chose them, and even when he sent them out, they were on the ordinary side. This is before they received the Holy Spirit. It's before Pentecost. It's before their heroic sacrifice of their lives. This is when they were just ordinary guys. Not at all impressive. And that's something to reflect on, that Jesus chooses people not because they're extraordinary, but in their ordinariness. He chooses us in our ordinariness. He chooses us by name. He loves us. He has a plan for us. Yes, at the end of the journey, God willing, and if we're cooperative, we will reign in glory. We will be very impressive in heaven, God willing. But right now, no. We're just plain old, ordinary people. I was thinking of this in light of what we heard last Sunday. Remember the story of Jesus going back to his hometown, Nazareth. I didn't notice it at the time, but listen to what it says in that Sunday gospel. Jesus departed from there and came to his native place, accompanied by his disciples. So these 12 characters who are following him around on the dusty streets of Israel, go with him to Nazareth. And remember what happened. The people of Nazareth did not accept Jesus. There's no record of how the people of Nazareth reacted to the other 12 guys. Apparently, they didn't make any impression on them at all, although the argument for silence is never very strong. But still, it doesn't say that they thought very highly of these 12 disciples. And then it says, and this is again Sunday's Gospel, Mark chapter 6, it says that as they were pushing Jesus aside, they were saying, well, he has these brothers, James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and sisters too. And he's the son of Mary, and he's a carpenter, and just an ordinary fellow himself. But we don't really know who these James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon are. But it's kind of striking that among the 12 apostles, there are two Jameses, there are two Simons, there are two Judases. And it's as if to say, these are just ordinary names. James and Joseph and Judas and Simon, of those four names, three of them are used among the apostles. Now, James, the brother of the Lord, is sometimes connected to the early church and to the letter of James. We don't really know. Then there's Judas. This Judas, is it not one of the Judases, or the Judas, Judas, certainly not Judas Iscariot? But is he the one who wrote the letter of Jude in the New Testament? We don't know. We don't know who all these people are. But we know that they're very common names. And we know that they made no impression on the people of Nazareth. Okay, so here we have the list again. Jesus chooses these ordinary people, and he sends them out with authority over unclean spirits and over diseases. Well, where in the world would these guys think they have authority over unclean spirits and diseases? Certainly not from themselves. not from their family background or their educational background or their social status. They have no reason to think why they could tell evil spirits to get lost. It all comes from Jesus. It all comes from divine authority shared with the ordinary 12. Then it says that he sends them out not to pagan territories, not to Samaritan territories, not to places where they might find more opposition or difficulty, or where they themselves might have psychological resistance, because, you know, the Jews didn't want to talk to pagans anyway. So he says, don't go to the hard places. Go for the low-hanging fruit. Go for the people of Israel. Go to your own tribes, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. There are people right nearby who need your ministry. And go to them and say, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And this is what God does for all of us. He doesn't pick us up and send us off to the moon or some impossible mission field. He says, okay, I love you, I call you, I know you, I choose you by name, now follow me. And that usually means follow me where you already are. You don't have to go off to pagan territory or Samaritan town. That time does come. It does happen when the Lord sends us to unfamiliar territories or unfamiliar places or uncomfortable levels where we are called to serve and face rejection. That does happen, but not right away. Establish or make known the presence of the kingdom of heaven where you are now, where you work, where you live, where you go to church, where you go shopping, where you visit people in the mall or in the doctor's office or whatever. That's where ordinary apostles are sent into the ordinary world with extraordinary power. So yes, we reflect on the 12 apostles, but we're also reflecting on ourselves. We're no better or worse than the apostles, but we share in their mission, apostolic mission. That's the life of the church. Today's first reading reminds us that one of the obstacles to the establishment of the kingdom is the substitution of other gods. This is Hosea. Remember, Hosea's initial symbol was that the people of Israel are adulteresses. The people of Israel are an adulteress. They're not faithful to the love of their husband. And that has been described in yesterday's reading and in today's reading as idolatry. Hosea points out that the more prosperous they became, the more idolatrous they became. The more abundant his fruit, the more altars he built. Not altars to the Lord, altars to the different gods, usually fertility gods. The more productive his land, the more sacred pillars he set up. These are all false religions. Well, what's the solution to that problem? Well, don't give them abundance, because abundance leads to their infidelity. What will lead to their fidelity? Being humble, being impoverished, being reduced, being reminded of their ordinariness, of their dependence on God. So what the Lord does through Hosea, for the people of that time, is reduce them, humble them, break down the pillars, destroy the break down the altars, destroy the sacred pillars. The high places shall be destroyed. Thorns and thistles shall overgrow their altars. All these efforts to honor these pagan gods are going to come to nothing, because they're actually nothing. And idolaters have to be reminded that by going toward false gods or putting their trust in anyone other than God leads to emptiness and deprivation. And then what? Well, then we cry out to God. It usually works. It's a little ironic, but usually when hardship strikes us, we realize we can't solve this problem. We need help. Lord, save us. Lord, help us. sometimes it's true. People, when they're in difficult situations, they turn against God. They just get angry at God for making life hard for them, and that's an unfortunate stage that might have to be passed through. But very often, it works. The method of the Lord to humble us works because it reminds us how much we need Him, how on our own, how ordinary we are, like the 12 apostles. But that's not the only thing He wants us to know. He doesn't simply want us to be aware of our limitations. He also wants us to know His great plan for us. But He can't get to that greatness if we have cluttered the atmosphere with our own pride and attachments and whatnot. So humility comes first, then greatness, right? He humbles the lofty, but He raises up the lowly. So starts by humbling us or reminding us of how ordinary we are, how weak we are, and then He raises us up. And that process of raising us up goes far beyond what we know in this world and what we can imagine. Because God's plan for us is much greater than simply having some success in this world. He wants us to reign in glory. He wants us to shine like stars. That's God's plan for us. So let us humble ourselves before Him, recognize our need for Him, and let Him do what He wants for us and in us.